the internet and we'll sing Oh God.
We've come a long way since 50,000 watt radio, haven't we? How many remember that? Yeah, me too. You know, I was sitting there thinking about a Bible study I did about generational differences. Most of you don't have a clue what a lot of those things were up there, right? Well, I was very happy to have this shown today. We have so many young people here today. So you can just tap a young person on the shoulder there and say, what does that mean? And they can probably tell you. So I do want to welcome all of you here today. And this is our home right here. We have a 24/7 lease on this room. We have the whole building to ourselves pretty much on Sabbath because the offices are closed those days of the week. The holy days that come during the week, we still don't cause any problem to anyone in here. So a lot of blessings, a lot of advantages we have to a beautiful place that we have to meet. Well, you know, one of the things that with regard to that technology, I don't want anybody to feel bad if you don't understand much of what was put up there. I think everybody, though, can see what an incredible tool the internet is and how much can be done, and to be thankful that there are young people that know about that kind of stuff. Because, I mean, most of us don't. I mean, I'm sort of the in-between generation. I love what technology does, but I don't have a clue how it does it. So I'm glad that some people do, though. And, you know, basically the internet is a tool. That's what it is. It's a tool to do God's work. But, you know, some things never change. I mean, technology is always changing. There's always new stuff coming up. And, of course, it has its advantages and disadvantages. But the basics of God's plan always remain the same. How to accomplish that, that's a different story. But all of us certainly need to stay grounded in the basics. You know, when I began attending services, I won't say how long ago, I don't want to alienate anybody here, but quite a while ago, it's been a few decades, one of the things I remember, in fact, I attended services twice before I went to Ambassador College, and one of the things I still remember that really impressed me is that one of the regular things that was done in the church area I attended, and I assume in most of the others as well, was work parties. And I don't know how many of you have been around for a while can think back on that as well. You know, people get together and go help somebody out in a particular need that they have, and you know, have a nice meal together and socialize and then get this work done to help out this needy person. And maybe it's just my imagination, but it seems like over the years that has not really been near as common as it used to be, or not as emphasized as it used to be. I think maybe we can say, well, you know, we're busier and both husband and wife are working and all this kind of thing. But of course, we still have 24 hours in a day. It's a question of how we use it as far as that goes. But so, you know, it's really heartwarming to me that we have a number of young people. And if you came over, if you're not like Wes over here, he's not a funny young person anymore. But anyway, you're with him, so we'll call you a young person too. So anyway, to come over here and actually help out with needy people, not only in the congregation, but also in the community. And I'll tell you, it's a heartwarming thing to me to see that. And it occurred to me also, I know some of the young people here have been through the Ambassador Bible Center, and I know that service projects like that are one of the things that ABC students engage in. And that, to me, is resurrecting reviving a very, very, very important aspect of what God's way of life is really all about. So I think it's good to be reminded of the importance of helping the needy. That's what I want to talk about today. And I have plenty of time to do it and still get down in plenty of time here. So it's an hour has gone by already. See how fast that was? Well, you know, I mentioned in the Blessing of Children ceremony that God has special concern for children. Well, you know, he also has a special concern for people in need and promises to protect them and provide for them. You know, in the human realm, the more important that people are, the more they tend to just not care about anybody else that's not up in their echelon, their ivory tower. God takes care of and is concerned about the needy people even more so than people who are not needy. And you can see that all throughout the Bible. I'm not obviously going to be able to cover all the scriptures on the subject, but you could do a word study, and of course, those of you that have Bible software can do a string search on this. Fatherless and widow. That occurs many, many times throughout the Old Testament, and actually at least once in the New Testament as well. I'm not going to cover all those, but I want to read a few of them here just to show you how concerned that God is for people in need. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 17 and 18. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 17 and 18. And I'll warn you in advance, the local people here know that I skip around a lot of different translations because I use Bible software. So I won't bore you with which translation is. Most of the time it's either going to be New King James or New Living Translation. So if it reads different than the Bible that's in your lap, it's probably a different translation. Okay? Deuteronomy 10, verses 17 and 18 says, "For the Lord your God is a God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome." Now, that could be said about a lot of people. They could say it about themselves, you know, self-important. But as great as God is, look what it goes on to say, "who shows no partiality nor takes a bribe." And verse 18, "he administers justice for," here we are, "the fatherless and the widow, and loves the stranger, giving him food and clothing." As important as God is, you know, I mean, the most important being in the universe, obviously, he still is concerned for and provides for the fatherless, the widow, stranger, and provides food and clothing. Psalm 146 in verses 5 through 9. Psalm 146 verses 5 through 9. Again, talking about God in this capacity, a little bit different wording, but pretty much the same thought. Verse 5 of Psalm 146 says, "Happy is he who has the God of Jacob for his help." You know, I hope we all can say that and realize what a great blessing it is to have God as our provider and our protector. And I'll tell you, the harder times get, the more we're going to appreciate that. It's easy to take those things for granted, but it's a tremendous blessing to know that God's always there for us. "Happy is he who has the God of Jacob for his help, whose hope is in the Lord his God, who made heaven and earth, the sea and all that's in them, who keeps truth forever, who executes justice for the oppressed." And we could talk about all these things for a long time and how lacking they are in the human realm. And notice going on, it says, "who gives food to the hungry. The Lord gives freedom to the prisoners. The Lord opens the eyes of the blind. The Lord raises those who are bowed down. The Lord loves the righteous." Verse 9, "the Lord watches over the strangers. He relieves the fatherless and widow, but the way of the wicked he turns upside down." This is an integral part of God's character, to have concern for and to provide for and protect and preserve the fatherless, the widow, the needy people. While we're in Psalms, let's go to Psalm 72. Psalm 72, and I read first of all verse 4. Speaking of God, says he will bring justice to the poor of the people. That's a pretty hard thing to find sometimes too, isn't it? To find true justice in the human realm. God says here in Psalm 72, verse 4, he will bring justice to the poor of the people. He will save the children of the needy and will break in pieces the oppressor. And skipping down to verses 12 through 14, he will rescue the poor when they cry to him. He will help the oppressed who have no one to defend them. Well, what an incredible thing that is. As great as God is, and he still reaches down for the most needy people and is willing to help them out. He will redeem them from oppression and violence, for their lives are precious to him. That's just a few scriptures to show what God thinks about people in need and how important it is to him, what a priority it is to him to help needy people. Well, guess what? What do you suppose the next point is? If God is that way, how do you suppose he wants his people to be? You got it. It should come as no surprise that he expects us to show concern for and serve the needy as well. There are many scriptures in the Old Testament and New Testament, we'll cover some of them, that express that. First of all, in Exodus 22, verses 22 through 24. Exodus chapter 22, verses 22 through 24. You know, God is very protective of needy people, and he specifies here again the fatherless and the widow. And obviously, in that culture then, it's not so much today as it was then, but back in that culture, the male was the head of the household. He was the breadwinner, and, you know, the wife was home with the children and what have you. And, you know, if the husband, something happened to him where the household was without the breadwinner and a provider, they didn't have Social Security. They didn't have these government programs. But God made provision for the people, which is probably a whole lot better than any system we have today, for that matter. But one of the things he says to do here, or not to do in this case, verse 22, you shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If you afflict them in any way, and they cry out, cry at all to me, I will surely hear their cry. And my wrath will become hot, and I will kill you with the sword. Your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless. I think he means business on that, don't you? Someone starts messing with poor, needy people. God says, you know, you're messing with me, and you're going to suffer greatly as a result of that, showing how important it is to God. Deuteronomy chapter 15, verses 7 and 8. Deuteronomy chapter 15, verses 7 and 8. Some more instruction here, right from the Pentateuch, the Scriptures. If there is among you a poor man of your brethren within any of the gates in your land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart nor shut your hand from your poor brother. That's an easy thing to do. You know, it's an easy thing to make an excuse. If you see somebody that has a need, you immediately reason your way out, well, you know, I hope they get some help, but I'm late, you know, for whatever. You have the parable of the Good Samaritan that illustrates that point, I think, as well in the New Testament. So it says, don't do that. Don't harden your heart nor shut your hand from your poor brother. But you shall open your hand wide to him and willingly lend him sufficient for his need, whatever he needs. It's talking about being generous. Opening your hands means being willing to, as it says, give here. It says to lend. That's kind of an interesting thing, too, because, you know, one of the reasons over the years the United States has been hated overseas is because of foreign aid, of all things. Because many politicians think, well, just give them a bunch of money. Well, you know, there are two extremes, I should say, of human nature. There are people who expect a handout, and that number is growing, it seems, in our culture. But there are also people, I think probably most of you would fit this category, that would feel embarrassed or maybe even ashamed to ask for help, you know? And so the idea here is when you just give something to somebody, it's like, you know, there's no opportunity for a person to feel like, well, okay, I've got a responsibility here. When you lend it to somebody, then they're thinking, well, this is not really my money. I'm going to use it. I appreciate the temporary help here to help get back on my feet, and then I can pay it back or help somebody or whatever in return. So there's a really big difference there. And, of course, there are other things about in the Scriptures about lending money as well. It does say that if a person can't pay it back, you don't just repossess them and their kids and their family and their, you know, car and their dog and their cat and parakeet and everything. You are willing to forgive. In fact, there's a stipulation, as we heard sometime back in a sermon I gave on economy, there's a stipulation in the Old Testament as well for that, for releasing of debts. Fantastic, fantastic system, and based upon God's concern that he expects his people to show as well for the needy. Deuteronomy chapter 15 and verses 7 and 8. Starting verse 7, if there is among you a poor man of your brethren within any of the gates in your land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart nor shut your hand from your poor brother, but you shall open your hand wide to him and willingly lend him sufficient. I guess I read that, didn't I? I'm having a senior moment here, so for those of you who haven't heard this before, the rest of you can cringe, but one of the things I say is that everybody has senior moments, but not all of us are old enough to claim them. So your time will come, you guys. I meant to skip down to verse 11, is what I meant to do in Deuteronomy chapter 15, which says, for the poor will never cease from the land. Jesus actually said that at one point in his ministry as well. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall open your hand wide to your brother, to your poor, and to your needy in your land. In other words, that's something that is always going to be. There's always going to be people who are poor. There are a lot of reasons for that, but so there's never lacking an opportunity to help someone in need, because there always are going to be needy people. Now, arguably, a few generations in the millennium, the rule of Christ on earth, maybe not. I say maybe not. I wouldn't guarantee that. You know, because there are always circumstances to come up where somebody has a special need. And it's part of God's way of life to help those people with whatever that need is, as we have opportunity to do. Let's go back to Psalms again, Psalm 41 and verses 1 and 2. Psalm 41 and verses 1 and 2. Blessed is he who considers the poor. The Lord will deliver him in time of trouble. The Lord will preserve him and keep him alive, and he will be blessed on the earth. He will not deliver him to the will of his enemies. You know, I think of helping someone in need as being not only just a one-way street, but kind of an investment. Because the old saying, you know, what goes around comes around. Every young person in this room is going to get older. And there's going to be a time when you're going to want someone to help you out. And I think God makes it pretty clear here that if we are generous in helping needy people, God's going to be generous to us. So, you know, that's the best insurance policy you can have, is to do what God says to do and then know that God will take care of you when your time comes along as well. I don't have it in my notes here, but I think it's in Matthew 6, Jesus talks about your investments. That's a pretty hot topic right now, right? He says, don't put your money into, you know, treasures on the earth where moth can get in and destroy it, or rust or whatever. That was before inflation. That's obviously a problem today, or all the other problems we're dealing with. But it says, invest your treasures in heaven, which means that do things that are going to please God. And that's the best investment you can make, because God's able to obviously provide for us regardless of what the economy is like. Let's go to the book of Proverbs now, chapter 14, verse 21, first of all. Just a quick one-liners here about helping the poor as well. Proverbs 14, verse 21. These next four, by the way, are in the New Living Translation. I won't say it all the time, but Proverbs 14, 21, New Living Translation says, it's a sin to belittle one's neighbor. Blessed are those who help the poor, once again. Verse 31 of Proverbs 14, those who oppress the poor insult their maker. Look at that. But helping the poor honors him. I mean, God takes it personally, once again, as I think we've seen, the way we treat the poor. Verse 13 of Proverbs chapter 21, a few pages over. Proverbs 21, verse 13, I mentioned earlier, you know, it's like an investment if you help the needy, that when your time comes, and when your time of need comes, God will reciprocate, take care of your needs. Well, the opposite is true here as well. Notice what it says. Those who shut their ears to the cries of the poor will be ignored in their own time of need. I've made a statement before that God's very good at role reversal. You know, if you don't know what it's like to suffer, well, maybe God will kind of let you do it just to see what it's like, so you can open your heart better to have compassion and help those people who are suffering. So it's a great system. I mean, it's a learning experience in this life. We can learn by doing things the right way. We can learn by doing things the wrong way. And either way, we're going to end up realizing God's plan, God's way of doing things is the best way to do it. So those who, again, shut their ears to the cries of the poor will be ignored in their own time of need. Skipping up to Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 27, says pretty much the same thing. Whoever gives to the poor will lack nothing. Now, it doesn't mean to say you have every single thing you ever wanted, you know, but basically it's talking about that your basic needs are going to be taken care of. You don't have to worry about that. Whoever gives to the poor will lack nothing, but those who close their eyes to poverty will be cursed. That's even stronger, you know, the difference between helping the poor versus neglecting to help the poor and ignoring the need. Pretty strong statements there. Now, these are overall principles, okay, but the Bible gets very explicit in other chapters, in the Old Testament in particular, with the system that Old Testament Israel was to live under. and the specific provisions, many of which, most of which perhaps, will be restored during the millennium when Christ rules on the earth. One of these is found in Exodus chapter 23, verses 10 and 11. Exodus chapter 23 and verses 10 and 11. This is based on this seven-year cycle, you know, and the Jubilee and the 50th year and that type of thing. It's saying here, 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its produce. But the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow. Can you imagine trying to implement that today? If the president-elect gets in the office and says, well, we're going to shut down all the industries and agriculture and everything for a whole year, you know, in the seventh year. Don't think that could happen too easily, but, you know, they did it in Old Testament Israel, probably will do it in the millennium under the rule of Jesus Christ. Why? For what reason? So that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave, the beasts of the field may eat. God's even concerned about the animals, you know, having enough to eat. In like manner, you shall do with your vineyard and your olive grove. Can you imagine a poor, needy person, you know, clocking off the years and coming up in that seventh year and they realize they can go out there and just really have a tremendous feast? And obviously, they would have to know how to put things up, you know, freezing, drying, that type of thing, because it has to last for 6 years, right, before there's another seventh year comes along. But what a blessing that is. You know, another related aspect of that, too, is found in Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10. Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10. This was something that was done every year at harvest time. It says, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field. You know, man's way is to basically just get everything you can for yourself. Don't leave anything for anybody else. You know, and they get equipment where you can extract a maximum out of it. You know, you have 24-hour milk machines that are sometimes called cows, or chickens, 24 hours. They keep the lights on them, you know, so you have to work until they die and just extract all the eggs out of them you can. That's Satan's way. That's not God's way. God says, you know, when you go out and do a harvest, just kind of cut the corners on there and leave the corners and kind of let it go. For what reason? Once again, same principle. It says, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them there for the poor and the stranger. And he says, I'm the Lord. Now, what's that significant about that? I'm the Lord, because this way I want it done. If you don't do it this way, you're in deep doo-doo. And you don't want to be in deep doo-doo with God, that's for sure. Gleaning, basically, is after the harvest. You know, there's stuff always left over. So you go in there and you pick up all the extra stuff. He says, don't do that. Just do your harvest, leave the extra stuff out there so the needy people can come in and glean. When I was pastoring Eugene, and actually was Ben here too in a previous lifetime, I don't know if you remember that. But anyway, we actually were very active in a gleaning program. It's a very big thing in Oregon. They actually have state laws to protect anybody from lawsuits. Because a lot of fields say, well, you know, owners, you can't do that because you're liable to get sued. Oregon was smart enough, somebody was smart enough, to actually have a law passed to protect landowners who open their land to people that come in and glean. So being the Scotsman I am, that appealed to me a lot, you know, to go in there. And there's still, I mean, I think that organization still exists. I'm pretty sure it does. You could go in there and glean stuff, and you keep half of it, you donate the other half to the needy. It's a beautiful program. You know, it's fantastic. And I assume that, I know it's going to be done in the world tomorrow as well. That's what it's talking about here. Leaving out for the needy and for the poor. Same thing as, you don't need to turn there, but also stated in Leviticus 23 in verse 22. Same words there, you know, to leave these things for the poor and for the stranger. Deuteronomy chapter 24 is repeated over there, not the exact same words, so we can turn there and read what it says there. Deuteronomy chapter 24 and verses 19 through 22. Starting verse 19, Deuteronomy 24, when you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, what do you do? Oh, I got it. I dropped something. I got to go back and get it. No, he says, just leave it there. Don't go back to get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. So the Lord, your God, may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, it's not good to beat animals, but you can beat trees. because you have to beat them, I guess, to, you know, for the olives to fall off, I assume. I've never raised olives, but it says you shall not go over the boughs again. So you don't just shake every last one off there. Just do it once and leave the rest of them up there, okay? So they can be for the stranger, fatherless, and the widow. And verse 21, when you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. Here's an expression over and over. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this thing. That's an interesting point, too. Remember your situation. Maybe you grew up in a family where everything wasn't provided that well. You know, there are a lot of famous people in the world who grew up, well, in this part of the country, picking beans, picking strawberries. Down south, it's picking cotton, working in the mines and stuff like that, you know. And those people don't ever forget that. And he told Israel, don't ever forget where you came from. You were slaves in Egypt. And now, you know, you're getting these great blessings. Just don't forget that, because there are still people that need your help. And he makes provision to make sure that that gets done. Deuteronomy chapter 16. You have instructions here regarding keeping the holy days. You know, we think of that as being a time we can take our funds, you know, festival funds, and just whatever we want. Well, that's true. But not to the neglect of people who are needy, because there are people sitting out there that don't have funds. And there's a provision made for those people to be able to rejoice as well. Starting verse 11 of Deuteronomy 16, you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, and the Levite who is within your gates. And that was an individual who really was not able to own property, but there's really no correlation today to anybody. Sometimes people say, well, ministry is like Levites. No, we're not. I own property. So it was a person who was needy, though, is the main principle that we glean from that. No pun intended. Anyway, so it says that these individuals who are among you at the place which the Lord your God chooses to make his name abide. So it's telling everybody to rejoice. Well, obviously, it's kind of hard to rejoice if you don't have the funds to do it, right? So it goes on to tell you then how that's to take place. Down in verse 14, it says, you shall rejoice in your feast, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, a Levite, and stranger, fatherless, and widows within your gates, once again. So there are specific instructions of how to go about this. You have to skip ahead to chapter 26 to find that. Deuteronomy chapter 26, and starting in verse 11. You know, one of my pet peeves, and I don't dare get off on a tangent here, but it's public assistance. I'm telling you, you know, it's first of all, no, here I go. I won't do it. Let's just put it this way. God has a lot better plan, okay, that really is appropriate. And, you know, it's honest, it's generous, and you can be truthful. You know, a lot of people have told me that if you don't kind of lie and cheat and that type of thing, you can't make it on public assistance. That's pretty hard for somebody in the church to do that, obviously, to be a Christian. So obviously we can't do that, but there are people out there who do. It puts our needy people in a real bind because the system is set up a certain way based upon people. Well, here I go. That's twice. That's enough. Let's read what it says in the positive here, Deuteronomy chapter 26. Starting verse 11, so you shall rejoice in every good thing which the Lord your God has given to you in your house, you and the Levite and the stranger who is among you. When you have finished laying aside all the tithe of your increase in the third year, the year of tithing, and have given it to the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, so that they may eat within your gates and be filled. So here's a provision here for an entire tithe in this particular year, the third year and the sixth year and the seven-year cycle, was to be saved up there and invite these needy people in to enjoy it. What an incredible blessing. It says, when you've done this, then you shall say before the Lord your God, I have removed the holy tithe from my house, and also have given them to the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, according to all your commandments which you have commanded me. I have not transgressed your commandments, nor have I forgotten them. I have not eaten any of it when in mourning, nor have I removed any of it for an unclean use, nor according to all that you have commanded me. Look down from your holy habitation from heaven and bless your people Israel and the land which you've given us, just as you swore to our fathers, a land flowing with milk and honey. That would be an awful good feeling for an individual to go through that entire year and realize that they have fulfilled what God said to do, have set this aside for the needy people, never did, you know, dip into it, kind of like government, you know, dips into Social Security and that kind of stuff, but saves it there for the needy, and then they have this whole year long where the needy people come in there and enjoy it, and this individual could sit back and watch that, and at the end of the year, you know, look up to heaven and say, God, it was a great year. I did what you commanded me to do, and, you know, and just ask God to bless them for that reason. What a wonderful thing that that must have been and will be in the future when that takes place. Well, so far we've just gone through the Old Testament, but, you know, helping the needy was a priority in Paul's ministry. No surprise, since he was brought up under the law, you know, he was familiar with these things and had to practice them. Notice what he says in Galatians chapter 2, verses 9 and 10. Galatians chapter 2 and verses 9 and 10. And what I'm going to read in verse 10 is something that probably skipped over quite a bit at the time, but yet, to me, it's extremely important, especially in the subject we're covering here today. Kind of breaking the middle of the thought here. He's kind of having to defend himself. There were people in Galatia who were competitors, you might say, who were jealous of the Apostle Paul and were accusing him of all these different things. And he was actually defending his office, his ministry, and what have you. And what he's saying is that, you know, I went up to headquarters, as it were, to Jerusalem, and kind of clued them in all the things I'm doing. And verse 9, it says, in fact, James, Peter, and John, who are known as the pillars of the church, recognized the gift that God had given to me, and they accepted Barnabas and me as their co-workers. They encouraged us to keep preaching the Gentiles while they continued their work with the Jews. In other words, he said, they put a rubber stamp, said, we agree with what you're doing, you're doing a fine job. And notice what he says in verse 10, their only suggestion was we keep on helping the poor, which I've always been eager to do, he says. So you think of the Apostle Paul, you think of this big, powerful preacher going out and preaching the gospel and, you know, working these miracles and all that kind of stuff. You don't often hear about the fact that he was always eager to help the poor, but that was a priority in his ministry. And again, what an example that is for us today as well. Here's probably the capstone scripture of all, at least in the New Testament. If you were to define, so what do you consider as being what we should do as Christians? What would you consider as being the main things that a Christian should do? How would you summarize that down into one or two things? Well, how about turning to James 1:27? Let the Bible do it for us, okay? James 1 and verse 27. Now, one of them you might have guessed. Well, you know, we need to be separate from the wrongs of the world. Okay, well, that's a given. We all know that. But notice what it goes on to say. I'm going to read this first in the New King James and the New Living after that, just to emphasize the point. Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this. Guess what? To visit the orphans and widows in their trouble, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. Look at the company there. You know, Jesus said, if you love the world, the love of the Father is not in you. It's pretty fundamentally important. Linked right with it here is, guess what? Helping the poor. Now, the word visit, by the way, doesn't just mean to go see somebody. I got to tell you that. That's very important. It can include that. The word visit in the Greek actually means, and I'll give you a definition from one of the lexicons here, to care for, to look after, with the implication of continuous responsibility. That's a very good definition. To care for, to look after, with the implication of continuous responsibility. I'll get technical, for Carl should know this because he was in my class at ABC. I should put him in a spot and ask him, but I won't be that mean. The Greek word here is the word where the Episcopal Church gets its name. Episcopeo, okay? Episcopeo. E-P-I-S-K-O-P-E-O. That's where we get the word microscope, telescope. That means to look. Epi means over or upon. It means to look over, okay? It's like a supervisor. someone who has a responsibility to make sure that something gets done. It's telling us here, not just we go see somebody once in a while, it's telling us to care for, to look after, and to realize a continuous responsibility of helping and serving people in need. Let me read this to you from the New Living Translation, which puts it very nicely, as it often does. Pure and genuine religion in the sight of God, the Father, means caring for orphans and widows in their distress and refusing to let the world corrupt you. How important that is. He said, this is what it's all about, folks. This is what pure and genuine religion is really about. You know, we can talk about love. We all know the two greatest commandments, right? Love God, love your fellow man. Well, yeah, but, you know, it translates down to situations of genuine need where there are people who need something, and God's people that are motivated by love are going to say, you know, I think I can do something to help out in this regard. The Apostle John wrote in 1 John 3, verses 17 through 19. I'll continue on our New Living Translation here. 1 John 3, verses 17 through 19. If someone has enough money to live well and sees his brother or sister in need, but shows no compassion, how can God's love be in that person? Good question, rhetorical question. If you have everything you need and you see someone who has need and you don't show any compassion, how can you say you're keeping a second greatest commandment, loving your fellow man, if you're not responding to that need? Verse 18, dear children, let us not merely say that we love each other. Let us show the truth by our actions. Our actions will show that we belong to the truth, so we will be confident when we stand before God. You know, you stand before God, and if we never helped anybody in need, and we had lots of extra funds in which to do that, be a little nervous standing before Jesus Christ. And he says, so how did you use your resources? How many people did you help? You know? Again, the same principle of caring and providing for the needy. In fact, that particular principle is also used in a well-known passage in James chapter 2, verses 15 and 17, to express the relationship between faith and works. It's a very familiar passage, I think. I'm not using it for that reason today. I'm using it for the literal point that's made. Verse 15, suppose you see a brother or sister who has no food or clothing. And you say, goodbye, have a good day, stay warm and eat well. But you don't give that person any food or clothing. What good does that do? You know, one of the things people say today is, have a nice day, right? Doesn't mean a thing. Doesn't mean a thing unless you actually do something to help that person. So you see, faith by itself isn't enough. Unless it produces good deeds, it is dead and useless. And so is love. Love is useless, too, if it doesn't have works. You can talk about it, use the words, quote the scriptures, but we have to practice it in our lives as we have opportunity to do so. Now, this doesn't just, so far, it's just your brother or your sister. This doesn't just apply to needy brethren. What does it say in the second greatest commandment, Matthew 22:39? It says, love who as yourself? Your neighbor as yourself. I don't have time to turn to that parable, but Luke chapter 10, verses 20, yes, I do too. I won't cover a lot of it here, but Luke chapter 10, verses 25 through 37. I won't read the whole thing here, but let's just see who it's talking about here with regard to this parable. Because in verse 25 of Luke chapter 10, a certain lawyer stood up and tested Jesus, saying, teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And it's a trick question. He said, well, you know what the book says. What does it say? How do you understand? So he said, well, it says, love the Lord God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, all your mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. Look how smart I am. Jesus said, very good. Now go do it. Good answer, right answer, but go and do it. And so what does the guy say? All of a sudden he's kind of stuck here. Verse 29 says, he wanting to justify himself says, well, I don't know who my neighbor is. You know, so I can't do it because I don't know what it means, what a neighbor is, see. That's what precipitated this parable. I'll just skip through it. I won't read it all, but I think we're all familiar. We've heard it many times before about this person that was lying beside the road injured, and And a priest came by and passed along, and a Levite came along, passed him by, and a Samaritan, one of the most despicable, despised people in the Jewish culture, came along and helped the guy. And Jesus says, so who is being a neighbor? See? Not who is my neighbor, but who is being a neighbor? Who is treating someone like a neighbor, like someone who is close to you, to help out and to serve? Being a neighbor to someone in need, that's really what it's all about. I mean, let's face it, the Bible even tells us to love our enemies. How much more our neighbor? Not just, you know, within the church. That's found in Romans 12, verse 20, but it's actually quoted from Proverbs 25, verse 21. I didn't realize that until I was preparing this message. It's always something new to learn. Proverbs 25, 21 says in the New Living Translation, it's quoted in Romans 12, 20, if your enemies are hungry, give them food to eat. If they're thirsty, give them water to drink. Now, there is an acid test of a Christian. Okay, you don't go by whether the person likes you or dislikes you. If they're a relative or a friend or a neighbor, you go by if they need help, you help them out. Okay? You help them out. That isn't done normally. I mean, if you do that, you're going to stand out. People are going to think, whoa. And I'll tell you something, if anything can ever turn an enemy into a friend, it would be coming and helping them out in the time of need. Because they would expect, you know, that they have a need or something. No sense coming to you because they're your enemy. So, and you actually help that person? Wow. It's an acid test of a Christian because it isn't easy to do. It's easier to say, well, it serves them right. God's probably punishing me for being so mean to me. No, let God take care of that part. It just says if you have even your enemy that has need of something, help them out. You know, the people we're going to be helping in a woodcutting tomorrow, I don't even know these people. I'm going to tell you a little bit about them here in a moment. I don't know what they're like. I just know they need something. The firewood. The winters do get cold over here, and it's colder than they do in the valley. Not as damp, but colder. So really, I think the moral of the story here is found in Galatians 6 and verse 10. Galatians 6 and verse 10. It says, therefore, whenever we have the opportunity, we should do good to everyone, especially to those in the family of faith. That says it pretty well. It qualifies it and says, whenever we have the opportunity. Obviously, there are people in here who don't have the opportunity for various reasons. But those of us who have the opportunity, as we do, we should do good to everyone. But it says, put a priority, of course, to those in the family of faith. Well, the first priority, of course, is your own immediate family. The next priority is church family. And the next priority after that is other people in need. But you don't just exclude people because they're not related to you, because they're not in the church. You know, you assess your priorities, but you help everybody as you're able to do. So that's really the bottom line of what we've read so far, is how we apply this in application in our daily lives. Another scripture in Psalm 112, you can keep your place there if you're able to do that, because I'm going to come back to that for the final scripture. We're actually going to get done early, believe it or not. Whew. I've never got a nosebleed, but moving so fast here. All of a sudden, your attention span kicked up because you know it's not going to be much longer. It's good. I know how that goes. I've been in the sitting end too. Psalm 112, this is the blessing that God pronounces here. Good comes to those who lend money generously and conduct their business fairly. Verse 6 of Psalm 112, such people will not be overcome by evil. Those who are righteous will be long remembered. You know, that's quite an interesting thing, too. You do something kind for someone, they never forget that. What a blessing that is. They do not fear bad news. They confidently trust the Lord to care for them. They are confident and fearless and can face their foes triumphantly. They share freely and give generously to those in need. Their good deeds will be remembered forever. They will have influence and honor. You know, Jeff mentioned something to me. We're talking on the phone, some details about tomorrow. And he mentioned something I said I was going to put in the sermon. I remembered to do it. This is good training for what we're going to do in the millennium. You realize that? I mean, what's your concept of helping people in the world tomorrow? Is it explaining some remote prophecy back in Minor Prophets? Is that what they're going to want to know? They're going to be needy people. They're going to need help. We're training right now to organize work parties in the millennium and the rule of Jesus Christ. You know, what a great blessing it is to be training for that while at the same time helping people in a situation of need. Let me just tell you a little bit about my wife's brother Don, Braden Jenny's son, is living on 25% of his heart. He had a massive heart attack. Was it been 2 years ago, something like that now? He's going to try to come out tomorrow with his truck, but he feels embarrassed because he's not going to be able to. He's a big strapping guy, you know, not as strapping as he used to be, but still pretty tall and everything. But, you know, he needs firewood. I won't name all the names of these people, but here is, as a gentleman, first person on the list that I called. I contacted the Central Oregon Council on Aging. In La Pine, and met the person there at the senior center, told her our situation, that we're planning to cut firewood for needy people, and asked if she could generate a list of needy people for us. And this was like, what, a week ago or something like that? I mean, this has all come up so suddenly, and it was basically right before the feast, and we went to the feast, came back 2 weeks later, less than 2 weeks, we went to Denver for a week to visit our daughter Tanya, and just got back Thursday night, so... You know, it's been a kind of a rush deal, but, you know, we have to make hay while the sun shines or cut wood before the snow falls, I guess is how it works in this particular case. Anyway, I just asked her if she would contact people, and she said, I've got 50 people on my list. I'll contact them. Now, wait a minute, 50 people on the list. Don't fall over here on me. So she said, I'll contact them and generate a list of names and phone numbers for you. You can contact and see if you can help. So she came up with actually 6 people in this short notice, which is a good number to start with. This first gentleman I talked to, his last name is Walker, by the way, interestingly enough, but this man has had a heart attack. He's limited in what he can do, and he has enough wood left for 3 days. That was right yesterday. So he will be out of wood after Sunday. So talk about stick shit in time, you know. Just perfect timing in that regard. He's the only one that's actually going to be able to drive his pickup with a trailer, and he's going to come out there about 10 in the morning. I told him we'd load him up with firewood. He said, I can still do some things. He said, I can't get out and haul the stuff and what have you, but at least I can bring my truck and my pickup. And so he's the first one. Here's a lady who firewood is her main source of heat. She has electric heat, but she can't afford to use it. That's going to become more and more common with the economy the way that it is. Another lady has an oil stove but can't afford to fill the barrel. It costs $900 to fill the barrel. Can't afford it. She is 75 years old. Her husband died this past year, and her granddaughter and baby are living with her. You know, it's one thing to realize in concept and principle that there are needy people out there, but when you actually talk to somebody like that and you hear their story, you know, I can really understand, you know, what Jesus said, it's quoted in the book of Acts, it's more blessed to give than receive. I probably won't have an opportunity to meet these people personally and go out and make the deliveries, but some of these people, what they said on the phone is just, so I'm like, so what's the catch? One person says, what's it going to cost? I said, nothing. So we're a church group. I did explain to him, I said, you might wonder why a church group is out there working on Sunday. I said, you know, we keep the Sabbath on 7 days a week at church on Saturday, so we'll be out there working Sunday. So, and I, you know, I wasn't trying to convert anybody. I figured that that might sound a little strange to some people. I thought I should kind of make that clear. Here's another lady who is disabled, has some wood, but not enough to last the winter. And here's what she said. This is an answer to prayer. She said, I just recently prayed that God would provide me with firewood. How encouraging is that? By the way, I told her I'd say to tell you this. She's disabled, but she has organizes a prayer line. You know, a bunch of people. Anybody has a prayer request, you call us and we'll pray for you. It's 536-PRAY, P-R-A-Y. So I told her I would tell you all about that. Here's another lady who has a fair amount of wood now, but may run out. She has two rows, mostly small stuff, that burns very quickly. And she's willing to stack the wood herself. Now, by the way, we don't have to stack it. We already have that. That's taken care of. I won't get into details. But we have a young person in the, that will be doing that. So all we have to do is cut it and deliver it. So, okay, one other one here is a widow who has some treated wood way in the back of the property. I told her, you don't want to burn treated wood. You poison yourself, you know, that's treated with, I don't know what it's treated with, probably some in here do, but what is it? Arsenic and formaldehyde, no big deal, just arsenic and formaldehyde. So I said, leave that stuff back there, we'll bring you some good stuff. She needs fresh wood on the porch. I mean, that's just a small fraction, you know, of people that have need. So, you know, one final scripture, go back to Galatians 6 there once again. Back up to verse 9. It says, so let's not get tired of doing what's good. You know, it's hard work to cut and load firewood. It's a tiring job. But just think about these people whose lives, livelihood, depend on people helping them out. And realize what a blessing and what a privilege it is to do that. Goes on to say, at just the right time, we will reap a blessing, a harvest of blessing, if we don't give up. You know, when you think about all the things that the Bible says about how God looks at the needy, and how he says he'll bless you when you take care of the needy. Now, I don't know, I'm very hesitant to make these bold statements that God's done this, God's done that. But you know, I ask you all to pray about the weather. When we were back there in Denver, we were checking the wet 10-day forecasts. And the original forecast for tomorrow was a high of 34 degrees with snow flurries. Not real good woodcutting weather. And it was supposed to snow the whole week before that. I was thinking, man, we may have to cancel this thing. And I sent out an email to most of you in here saying, please pray about this because there are a lot of people that need this wood. You know what the latest forecast, well, it's the latest, I think it's the latest, 63 degrees high. That is unseasonably high. The average temperature this time of year is 45 degrees. And the latest thing says sunshine. Now, I'm going to warn you, when we start in the morning, it's not going to be 60-some degrees. When Karen and I get the paper at 8:30 this morning, it was, 19 or something like that? But, you know, when you're busy and everything, you won't notice it that bad. And we have nice hot soup. Oh, I'm talking about food. It's time to quit. That's a good thing. Anyway, so it says, you know, if we do this, we don't get tired doing what's good. And one thing about younger people, they have a little more energy and things. And, you know, but we all can think about those needy people, you know, and we're putting forth that effort and realize what a blessing it is, you know, to be able to help someone in need like that and how fundamental it is to God's way of life. So I just want to say to all of you that are helping out, and I know if you're not able to come out, that's understandable. As it says, as we have opportunity, I thank you for your prayers for the weather and your continued prayers for the success of this operation. I've never done anything like this before in terms of organizing a crew in this manner. So we still need God's blessing and help with it. Yet no injuries, good point, yes. That nobody gets injured, because those things can certainly happen as well. So that's something, I mean, everybody can do something to help out in this whole project here. So, you know, I just want to say on behalf of those people who's I refer to here in that list and others here in the congregation who need firewood but are physically unable to do the work, I just want to thank all of you for your service of pure religion tomorrow.